Ohio State finally plays a ranked team. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score, 89.7's weekly look at sports. This week we'll talk to a Columbus Crew beat writer as the team gets ready to play one of the biggest playoff games in franchise history.
Then we'll talk to a USA Today writer about one of the most iconic trophies in college football history, the Crystal Football. We'll talk to him because it's on campus this weekend for the Ohio State-Michigan State game.
But first, Ohio State continues its pursuit of another Crystal Football, and it's a big test, the first big game of the season, Thomas.
Ohio State-Michigan State, it's the biggest game of the day on Saturday. Ohio State's first-ranked opponent, it's do-or-die time for the Buckeyes.
Joining us now in studio to preview the game, Bill Rabinowitz from the Columbus Dispatch. Bill, I know this is easy for a doughy, slow guy to ask, but how good is Michigan State? They were supposed to be really good. They're the preseason number two. Now they've lost to Nebraska. They've fallen to number nine. What's your read on Michigan State?
Well, they're a little bit like Ohio State, except even more so in the sense that people expected greatness from them every week, and they haven't been. Really, the only team they've blown out is Indiana, and even that was, you know, somewhat of a game. They've been ravaged by injuries. They lost one of their best players, Ed Davis, linebacker, before the season started. Obviously, this week, the big question is, can Connor Cook go, and how effective can he be? He hurt his shoulder last week against Maryland. So injuries are a legitimate excuse for the Spartans, but they have not been the dominating team that a lot of people thought they'd be.
Their defense just isn't the team that it was last year. They had some, you know, top guys that were taken in the NFL draft this year, so they really decimated by graduation, if nothing else.
Yeah, no question. The secondary especially has been hit hard by injuries. They still have a very good front four led by Shalique Calhoun, who's an All-American caliber player. So it's not as if Ohio State's going to just go in there and just know they're going to roll past Michigan State. They're still a very, very good team, especially on defense.
You mentioned the injury to Michigan State quarterback Connor Cook. Do we know any updates on that? I know their head coach is very cagey about injuries, but do we know anything?
No, I don't think there's any way to know it. Yeah, Mark D'Antonio basically said, we don't talk about injuries during the week. We don't talk about it. And so, okay, Connor Cook, when he talked to reporters this week, said, you know, I'm good to go, whatever. That's what they always say. Whether he really is, we won't know until Saturday.
Ohio State should be starting quarterback JT Barrett. I mean, unless something crazy happens between now and then. I mean, we've had a change how many times. But JT Barrett and this offense, are they ready and up for the task to go against this Michigan State team?
Well, after Rutgers, I would have said yes. After the bye week with what happened with JT and the OVI, and then last week against Illinois, the offense struggled in the passing game. They had the offensive line and tight ends and everybody really had a hard time protecting JT Barrett. If that's the case again, if they don't get that pass protection shored up, it could be a long day. But I know that they've worked on it very hard. Urban Meyer said after Saturday's game that maybe they haven't spent enough time on that. So I think they'll clean that up. A guy to watch is right tackle Chase Ferris. He's the only new starter. He struggled last week. He's a key player in this game.
Michigan State plays a ball control, run the ball, kind of Jim Tressel type of football. How do they match up with Ohio State? They have a good front four on defense, but how else do they match up, and what matchups are you really looking for?
Well, Michigan State's actually thrown the ball a lot more this year than they have in the past. They've usually been a run-oriented team, but this year they've had a lot of injuries on the offensive line, so they have not run the ball very well. They've had a rotating group of running backs, so they really relied on Connor Cook. His number one receiver is Aaron Burbridge. He's emerged from a kind of a pack of receivers to be their go-to guy, and he's going to put a lot of pressure on Ohio State's defense.
We're kind of looking down the stretch of the season where Ohio State needs to either buckle in or back out. They had their big game against Virginia Tech at the beginning of the year that was kind of their marquee Monday night Veterans Day game or Memorial Day game.
Labor Day game.
Sorry. One of those holidays. No, they had their Labor Day game. Now they've got Michigan State, Michigan, and Iowa, which will be the Big Ten championship game if they can make it that far. Are they going to have to turn it on kind of like they turned it on last season?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think that the Ohio State players would agree that the way they've played through 10 games is not good enough to get them to the national championship again. But as you said, they didn't have to be great in September and October and half of November. Now they have to be great. And when the bar is raised, can they get over that bar? That's what the next 5 weeks will tell us.
Bill Rabinowitz from the Columbus Dispatch joining us here on After the Score. If Ohio State does lose to Michigan State, you never know, right? They lost to Virginia Tech last year. They're pretty much on the outside looking in, but they still can make the playoff. It's pretty much a situation where they have to win out to make the playoff, you think?
Well, if they win out, they're in the playoff. If they,
right.
I don't care about style points. I don't care if they win ugly the next 3 weeks.
They're going to be Florida State from last year. They're in because they were the national champions.
They would be in because they're undefeated, and if that's the undefeated Big Ten champion this year is going to get in. If they lose to, let's say, Michigan State, and Michigan loses to Penn State, and then through all these tiebreakers, Ohio State manages to get into the college football playoff, and let's say they beat Michigan soundly and they crush Iowa, then they've got a case. It all depends on what else happens around the country. It's people say, well, if they do this, are they in? Well, it all depends on what other teams do.
You have to look at the Big 12, see if there's an undefeated Big 12 team.
Notre Dame.
You got to look at Notre Dame.
Card.
Yep. There's probably a lot of factors that
exactly.
go into it. So let's jump back to Saturday. Saturday in the shoe, 3:30 game. Who you got? If you want to make a prediction, I don't know if you make predictions, but who you got?
Well, we have to do it in the Dispatch, which honestly is not my favorite thing, and I don't spend a lot of time on it. But I said 31-20 Ohio State, just because of the uncertainty with Connor Cook, the fact they're playing at home. In fact, I think they're a slightly better team than Michigan State, especially the state that Michigan State's in terms of injuries. Ohio State, for the most part, has been spared injuries, except for the wide receivers, which have been they've lost a bunch of them, and some in the secondary. They've really been pretty lucky with injuries. So given all that, I think Ohio State's a better team. The one thing, though, to keep in mind is the team that's been the underdog in this game has won the most recent games. In 2012, Ohio State went to Michigan State, and that really propelled them in that undefeated season. Obviously, we know what happened in 2013 in the Big Ten Championship game.
1998, maybe one of the bigger upsets in OSU history.
Sure. There's a long history of Michigan State, Ohio State games being huge, dramatic upsets. So anything can happen.
But if we look toward to last year, Michigan State, Ohio State was the turning point for this Ohio State team, or at least last year's Ohio State team. It's really what propelled them. They're sitting somewhere around 16 in the polls, and they made their way all the way up. So is it something about playing Michigan State that could bring out the best in this team?
It could. That was one of their best games last year. They had survived the Penn State game, and that was the one that kind of internally
kicked them in the butt.
Yeah, it did. And then Michigan State was the game that was kind of their debut on the national stage post Braxton Miller. And so, this is a statement game. There's no question about it.
Ohio State runs the ball very well. Michigan State relying on the pass increasingly. If the weather is cold and rainy, as it's supposed to be, do you think that benefits Ohio State more than Michigan State?
Yeah, I would think so. The only caveat to that would be that Connor Cook's got a stronger arm, if it's healthy, than JT Barrett, and he might be able to deal with the wind and the rain a little better. The velocity on his throws might be better in that. But I would say if the run game or the pass game is kind of eliminated, yeah, that certainly favors Ohio State.
It's a big test for Ohio State. They take on the ninth-ranked Michigan State Spartans on Saturday in Ohio Stadium. Bill Rabinowitz covers the OSU football team for the Columbus Dispatch. He also wrote the book, The Chase, How Ohio State Captured the First College Football Playoff. Bill, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Picture the scene. Confetti is flying from the top of the stadium. Ohio State is on the field after defeating Miami. It's January of 2003. And one of the most iconic pictures from after that game is over is of Jim Tressel looking at this crystal football with an absolute look of glee. It goes down in Ohio State football history as one of those iconic images. It's one of Ohio State's national champions. But what about the trophy? Where did the idea of that trophy come from? What's the history of that, and is it still around? I know we've got the college football playoffs, and they have their own trophy. Is that crystal football still in commission?
Yeah, Thomas, it turns out it is actually still in commission. Joining us now to talk more about that trophy and all of college football is Dan Wolkin. He covers college football for the USA Today. Dan, thanks. Welcome to the program. Talk about the history of that trophy and what exactly it means to college football.
Well, I think it just sort of became the symbol for winning a national championship. It's a distinct trophy. It's the kind of thing you can, you know, hold up. And I think there's a bit of lore associated with it. I think, you know, I think one of the Alabama championships, somebody actually dropped it and it broke. And
typical.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a great trophy. I have gotten my picture taken with it before. It's a lot of fun to see people's reaction to it. I mean, it's a little bit like the Stanley Cup, I think, in that way. You know, college football fans have always sort of recognized it as the symbol of supremacy in the sport.
So I think a lot of people honestly don't know that the trophy is still given out. Or explain, when they moved to the college playoff system away from the BCS, I kind of assumed that the trophy went away, but it didn't. Is that a common misconception?
Right. So the Amway Coaches Poll champion now gets the trophy. And the college football playoff wanted to do their own trophy, which is certainly within their right. Basically, the BCS had adopted the Coaches Poll trophy, which is sanctioned by the American Football Coaches Association. So obviously for coaches, because they're part of that association, they're part of that group, it has a lot of meaning for them. And I think the coaches still wanted it to be around, be given out, and have some meaning. So essentially now, when there are the team on the field that wins the college football playoff gets the college football playoff trophy, which I honestly think looks a little bit like a tube of lipstick. I don't know if you can picture that, but it sort of looks like a big gold tube of lipstick. And, you know, and so that's what they're presented on the stage there. And then the coaches poll trophy is now going to be presented at a separate ceremony on campus at some point after the championship game.
So double hardware for the national champions. They get the crystal ball trophy. They get the tube of lipstick trophy. Ohio State has both of those sitting at the Woody Hayes Athletic Complex from last season. You've been watching college football. You cover college football. Does Ohio State have a chance? Obviously, they have a chance, but what are their chances going into to take home the hardware 2 years in a row?
Well, we know it's very hard to do for a lot of different reasons. It's not the same team as it was last year from a personnel standpoint. We have not yet seen Ohio State sort of pop off the screen the way that everyone thought they would. This was, go back to week one and the first half against Virginia Tech, and they looked so tremendous. You know, it sort of felt like this whole season was going to be a coronation. And then, of course, reality sets in and expectations. It's a weird thing that happens. You know, you win, but you don't win by enough. And people start saying, what's wrong? And, you know, of course, they have had the quarterback situation being unable to sort of decide and having to let that evolve organically about whether Barrett or Cardale Jones was going to start. They have demonstrated that they're probably better defensively than they were a year ago, but offensively, their line has underperformed. They don't seem to have quite as many deep threats at receiver. It's just been a little bit off, and I think the big question is when they play Michigan State on Saturday, are they going to finally, you know, look like the team that people thought they were going to be now that the real games have started? They've played a pretty easy schedule to this point, and they haven't had to sort of push themselves to win these games. Now they're playing teams that they respect, that they know. Are we finally going to see the Ohio State that we expected to see? That's the big question.
Ezekiel Elliott, Ohio State's running back, finally looking like the player a lot of people thought he would be in the preseason. He's gaining a lot of hype as a Heisman contender. Who do you have as your Heisman front runners right now?
I think that probably Derrick Henry from Alabama's moved to the front of the line based on the last couple weeks. I think a lot of people are going to vote for Deshaun Watson at Clemson with their season going the way it's gone, and he's put up some great numbers, and he's a tremendous player. Elliott will be in the mix, certainly. I don't vote in it, so I don't really pay that much attention to, you know, the statistics and stuff like that. But obviously, there's going to be a lot of support for Elliott. But, you know, he's had some games this year where it felt like they didn't give him the ball enough. And, you know, I don't know if he'll have the overall numbers and body of work to win it, but He's certainly one of the best players in the country.
That iconic Crystal Football Trophy, given to the national championship in college football every year, will be in Columbus this weekend, as will ESPN's College Game Day show for OSU's big matchup with Michigan State on Saturday night. Dan Wolken covers college football for USA Today. Thanks for your time, Dan.
Sure, thank you.
So it's been a very football-centric program so far, at least American football. And there is a soccer game, a big FC game, if you will, in Columbus this weekend.
The Eastern Conference Finals. The Columbus Crew SC versus the New York Red Bulls. All the marbles for the Eastern Conference come down to this two-game series, one in Columbus and one back in New York City.
That's right. The Crew trying to get back to the MLS Finals for the first time since 2008. Pat Murphy covers the Crew for the website Massive Report. He's in studio now. Pat, thanks for coming in. The Crew are fresh off a two-game series win over Montreal, but the competition gets a little tougher this week. They take on the New York Red Bulls, who were the best team in MLS this season.
Yeah, they finished with the top record. Actually, they tied for the top record, but won it on the tiebreaker. But yeah, I mean, they were, you know, the most consistent team throughout the season this year. It's a team that's, you know, finished this high before but never won an MLS Cup, and they've been there since 1996, which was the first year of the league. So this is the year that a lot of people are saying this could be the first time New York really kind of closes the deal, and Columbus is the next team in the way, kind of, is the look.
What makes New York so good?
A lot of things. They've, you know, it starts with defense, sorry. You know, they've got a real good goalkeeper in Luis Robles. The back line's strong. But the biggest thing is the way that they pressure you through the midfield and with their attacking players. You know, when you have the ball and you're trying to bring it out of your defensive, you know, third of the field, they push high. Their players are right on top of you. You know, they target certain areas of the field to press certain teams depending on, you know, what they see on film. And it's been effective this year. Their midfielders work very hard to kind of force you into mistakes, and then, you know, they take advantage real well. They've got talented guys up top that can punish you when they get a chance, and so that pressure kind of, you know, forces you into mistakes, and then they're very good at being opportunistic and taking advantage of those.
And the Crew and the New York Red Bulls did play three times this season. Talk about how those games went.
Yeah, Greg Berhalter was talking about them the other day, and he called them three very different games. The first one, the Crew lost 2-1. And Berhalter said that press really surprised Columbus. It was early in the season, and you know, they weren't expecting that kind of pressure from New York. The second one was the one that the Crew won, and that was a game where the Crew came out and just possessed the ball the entire game, took kind of advantage of opportunities, and you know, Berhalter called it, you know, we surprised them with our play and kind of the pace that they took. And then the game most recently was a loss for Columbus in New York. And that game, you know, it's arguable that Chrissy were the better team, but they, you know, they had a couple of mistakes. You know, they took an early, you know, they played well early, took an early lead, and then kind of fell behind to New York, you know, off a couple errors. And so it's going to be an interesting series because the teams were fairly evenly matched. All the games were 2-1, so pretty close. And, you know, these are two of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. I mean,
the Crew won the title in 2008. They were MLS champs, so they've been to the mountaintop, proverbially speaking.
Yeah.
This is pretty high up there, though, right, as far as the biggest games in Crew history?
Yeah, it'll certainly be one of those. 2008, you know, obviously was a big season, and like you said, they won the championship. But, you know, this is a chance to get back there for the first time since then. You know, they won their first playoff series since then in the last round against Montreal. You know, going against the top team in the league and, you know, the top team in the East and a team that's been, you know, relatively strong the last few years, you know, this could really make a statement if you can, you know, defeat them and get a chance at another MLS Cup. You know, it's going to be a big day Sunday with the first leg at home.
Is ownership doing anything unique? They are adding some seats, right, to the stadium?
Yeah, the sellout, the stadium sold out very quickly, which is good to see. You know, we've talked about how they didn't have great attendance for the playoff games last year, and the games so far have both been sellouts. They're adding seats on the stage. If you've ever been to Moffray Stadium, they put a stage in the north end zone. And for big games like this, they, you know, add it, and they're saying it's going to be, you know, beyond capacity type of game. In terms of events, I haven't heard of anything been announced yet. It wouldn't surprise me if in between the two legs next week they have some sort of, you know, pep rally type thing somewhere in Columbus. You know, they did that in 2008 when the team was making a run as well.
I know a lot of diehard fans don't like the quote-unquote fair-weather fans who show up once the team's good, but those fans can really be vital to a franchise's success, and it sounds like those fans are coming to Crew games now. It's not just the diehards.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, with any team, you're going to have those people that show up when the team's good, and, you know, fans can get upset with that, but you need those people. Kai Kamara was talking the other day, and he said for the last game he got text messages from friends of his in town that, you know, had probably never been to a game before, but were excited about going and, mm-hmm. you know, texting him, I'm coming out to your game. And, you know, that either those people, you know, go and they have a good time and they come back, or, you know, they slowly become one of those diehard fans. It's still a sport that's building 20 years in. And, you know, you need those people to come out and see that kind of atmosphere and have, you know, a good experience in order for the sport to continue to grow.
The Crew still have a big challenge here with New York. If they were able to get past New York, they would play the winner of the Western Conference Finals. That's Dallas against Portland. Who do you see winning there, and then who would the Crew rather play, you think?
Yeah, I think definitely to answer your second question, they'd definitely rather play Portland because that means they would host the MLS Cup Final because Portland is a lower seed. The likely answer would be Dallas. Dallas was the top team in the West. They actually tied on points with New York. Dallas as a team the last few years has been really good early on in the season and kind of fallen off as the season's gone on. This year they were finally, kind of like New York, were finally, you know, playing really consistent throughout the season. They were the second best team in the league, and, you know, they're well coached, play a real similar way to New York where they pressure you and try and counterattack. So I think if you're a, you know, Crew SC fan, Crew SC player, you'd rather see Portland just because of, you know, the lower seed and the chance to host the game. But, you know, in all likelihood, it would probably be Dallas just because of the way they've played this season.
To put you on the spot, who do you see winning, Columbus or New York?
I think it'll be a close series. I think, you know, in the end, I think New York has a little bit more. I could see this game going the Crew's way at home, but when you get to New York and hosting that second leg, I think is a big advantage, especially if it goes to overtime like we saw when Chrissy played Montreal. So a tight series, but I think New York probably pulls it off.
The Columbus Crew hosts the New York Red Bulls in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals Sunday inside Moffray Stadium. Pat Murphy covers the Crew for Massive Report. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
So Thomas and I both wanted to share our thoughts on what is probably necessary, but I guess it's a sad indictment of our generation that professional baseball stadiums now have to extend the nets, make the nets behind home plate bigger. And why is that, Thomas?
Because at baseball games, people have their face in the phone. They're taking pictures. They're
for
looking.
Shame.
They're not watching the game, and I don't blame them. Honestly,
right? I mean, we're all Instagramming. We all want our friends to see the picture of our cute kid who's with us at the game, except you, because you don't have kids. But yeah, I mean, it's natural, right? It's an extension of our social lives. Our phones are.
And the last thing baseball needs is a foul ball to hit some 15-year-old kid that's texting in the face with a ball. They do not need that because he's not paying attention. That's the last thing they need. I think this is a good proactive approach to fix our generation and add bigger nets on the field.
Do they soon start making fans wear helmets and face masks?
It's long down the line, probably. Probably 10 years before they make them wear protective gear. But
also something that kind of perked my interest, Arkansas head coach Brett Bielema, obviously the former head coach at Wisconsin, he wants to start some kind of Big Ten versus SEC challenge, similar to what college basketball does with the Big 12 and the SEC is also the Big Ten and the ACC. Bielema's concept, this is according to ESPN, would consist of ranking all 14 teams in both conferences during the preseason and matching them with their respective non-conference counterpart for a game that season. And this seems a little out there for me. It seems like a little too much.
That sounds like a disaster. Honestly, at least for Big Ten fans, that sounds like an all-around disaster. I think the biggest argument we've been having between Big Ten and SEC for a long time is that the top of the Big Ten can compete with the top of the SEC.
And by top of Big Ten, we mean three teams?
Maybe two some seasons, honestly. Sometimes just one team.
But that's the problem. The SEC and the top of the SEC, that might be seven or eight teams.
The entire SEC West is the top of the SEC.
Yeah.
Like, they all beat each other up. There's no doubt that top to bottom, I think the SEC has more talent, because when you start matching your Arkansas against your Northwestern, it's not even close.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of where we're at on the scale, is an Arkansas who just beat LSU bad is going to be matched up with someone like Northwestern or Rutgers. And it just does not
even
sound like
Tennessee versus Purdue.
But
could get ugly.
It will get ugly.
It would be kind of leading the sheep to the wolves. Do you think, what are the chances that Bielema proposes this when he's the head coach at Wisconsin still? Like 0%?
Negative percent. He doesn't. The biggest thing is he wants to be the loudest guy with a microphone.
He usually is.
And whatever he has to say will usually fit his current agenda, not any past agendas, not any future agendas. He just wants to be the loudest guy with a microphone.
Well, let's take a look at some of the big sporting events coming up this weekend. Bielema's former team, Wisconsin, they host Northwestern, probably the biggest game in the Big Ten, besides, of course, OSU, which hosts Michigan State on Saturday. Some other big college football games we're looking at: Baylor at Oklahoma State, TCU at Oklahoma. I never thought I would have said this a year ago. Memphis at Temple is a big game. And also in the SEC, LSU at Ole Miss.
I'm really excited for both of those Big 12 games. An undefeated Big 12 team, despite not having a Big 12 championship, is going to come out of this and probably get a playoff spot. So it's going to be one of those four teams. If they can make it out unscathed, they all play each other in the next couple of weeks. Turning now to the NFL, the Browns and the Steelers, they played last week. They are both on bye weeks this week. And the Bengals are at Arizona for a Sunday night football game. Carson Palmer against Andy Dalton.
Carson Palmer drops 400 yards on him, and the Cardinals win 37-14.
Set a Browns fan.
And finally, the NHL, the Columbus Blue Jackets play Friday night against Nashville. Then on Sunday, they host the Sharks inside Nationwide Arena. And that will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. You can find all our episodes on the WOSU Public Media mobile app, also on iTunes.
Give us a shout out on Twitter. Our handle is @AfterTheScore. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.